Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on The Voice of America.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the sunny side of sports. Four gold medals were awarded Monday evening in athletics at the African Games in Morocco. Benjamin Keegan and Lillian Rengaruk led the Kenyan charge at the Prince Mule Abdallah Stadium in Rabat. Benjamin won the men's 3,000-meter steeplechase race in 8 minutes and 12.39 seconds. And Lillian finished first in the women's 5,000 meters race with a time of 15 minutes and 33.63 seconds. Athletes from Egypt and Nigeria won gold medals in the men's discus and the women's triple jump, respectively. The Egyptian Shahab Ahmed won the men's discus with a distance of 59 meters, 29. And the Nigerian Grace Anigbata won the African Games women's triple jump title with a season-best distance of 13 meters 75. Tuesday will be an even busier day in African Games athletics with finals in 10 events. Ivorian sprinter Marie-Josée Talu will be defending her African Games title in the women's 100-meter dash. The 30-year-old Talu is also the reigning African Games champion in the women's 200 meters. She traveled to Rabat after competing in the 200-meter race at the Muller Grand Prix meet in Birmingham, England. And that's where the energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Talu. Here's Andy.
Nigel, Talu, you were in the 200 meters, but it sounds as if you would just be glad that you finished the race and you're looking ahead to the World Championship. So tell us about the injury problems you've had recently.
You know, this year is not really my good year, but thanks God, because I don't have any problem, you know. Two times or three times I have injury in my legs. So after the French Championships, I get injury in that part. I cannot walk. I cannot.
You're pointing to your upper thigh or groin.
Yeah, yeah. So now I just wear spikes 2 days or 3 days before coming there. I think 2 days. I didn't run since French Championships. So I'm just happy to finish my race today. I'm just happy to be healthy. And I know the most important was not today, is Doha. So I'm going back to work and yeah.
So it doesn't look like it's an injury which is going to stop you going to the World Championships. Are you going to take a little time off maybe or recover?
No, I'm going to train hard. Yeah, I'm not going to stop because I stopped 2 weeks without training. I think 2 weeks, still 2 weeks now. So I'm just going back to work really hard and come back.
So it's all systems go then for you for the World Championships. You're confident. You're getting back into shape after that injury scare.
Yes, I'm really confident. I know I'm not alone. I have my coach. I have all the person who support me. I have God with me, and I have the power to go and come back with some things better. So
thanks very much, Marie-Josée.
Welcome.
That's Ivorian sprinter Marie-Josée Talu, the reigning African Games champion at both 100 meters and 200 meters. And she was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards in Birmingham, England. Meanwhile, Egypt continues to dominate the medal table at the African Games in Morocco, with medals still to be awarded on Tuesday. The Egyptians have 119 medals total, 37 gold, 53 silver, and 29 bronze. South Africa is next with 56 medals, 25 gold, 17 silver, and 14 bronze. In Olympic news, there are growing concerns that the heat and humidity at the Tokyo Games next summer may pose a danger to athletes. Earlier this month, a worker at an Olympic construction site in the city died from heat stroke. Across the country, a heat wave beginning late July killed at least 57 people. Organizers say they are taking measures to combat the potential hazards, as Henry Ridgewell reports from the Japanese capital.
Summer in Tokyo, with temperatures topping 35 degrees Celsius, clear skies, and humidity peaking above 80%. Conditions that pose a big danger at next year's Olympic Games, says George Havenith of Britain's Loughborough University, an expert on the effects of temperature and climate on athletes.
When it gets warmer, of course, the skin gets warmer and doesn't lose that much heat to the environment, and the sweat evaporation still is then the main factor for cooling. Now, if we also push up the humidity as it would happen in Tokyo, that means that that sweat evaporation gets even more difficult. So it gets more and more difficult to lose the heat.
Heat stroke is a big danger, especially for endurance events, says Havenith.
About 15% of athletes, even in a cool environment, have body temperatures above 40 degrees Celsius. Now, if we push the temperature higher and the cooling gets more of an issue, we get more and more athletes in that whole cohort going into these temperatures above 40 degrees Celsius, bringing them closer and closer to the level where we can expect an exertional heat stroke.
Tokyo hosted test events in recent weeks, including a mixed triathlon relay and a swimming marathon, among the endurance sports seen as posing some of the biggest dangers to athletes. Japanese athlete Yumi Kida was among those taking part in the swimming marathon. She said, "The sunlight was strong and the water temperature was high. When I joined the race, I worried I might suffer from heat stroke." Games organisers have shifted the start times of several endurance events to begin early in the morning and say they are taking other measures to mitigate against the heat. Yasuo Mori of the Tokyo 2020 Games Operations Bureau says those measures include increasing water supply points and cooling areas. He says he also heard they are deploying medical staff every 500 metres of the marathon course. Scientist George Havenith says additional measures may be needed.
Having ice baths available for the athletes to cool them down quickly if they have an exertional heat stroke is the advised method.
The last time Tokyo hosted the Olympics in 1964, the Games were moved to October to avoid the summer heat. With a packed sports calendar and demands from global broadcasters, that's no longer possible. Scientists say it's vital athletes acclimatise themselves well in advance of the start of the Games in July 2020. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Tokyo.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports. on The Voice of America.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In African basketball, the top official in charge of FIBA Africa Zone 3 says boys and girls in the zone are responding positively to its development programs. Iron Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos, Nigeria.
Sam Amedu, a retired colonel, is the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3. The 8 countries that make up the zone are Benin, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Niger, Nigeria, Togo, and Liberia. Amedu says the zone has created awareness among member countries on the importance of youth competitions.
What we have done as a zone, our emphasis has been first to create awareness among the countries of the zone on the importance of youth competitions or youth development. Because you cannot get a strong national team or develop basketball in your country if you don't develop the youths. We started by first in trying to harmonize the calendars.
Ahmed says in some member countries, there are deliberate efforts to develop basketball, while others see it as a recreational affair. He says with the creation of FIBA Africa Zone 3, the response has been good, though it was not easy initially. Amedu, also a member of FIBA Africa Central Board, says countries like Togo and Burkina Faso did not allow their children to travel out of their countries because they were underage. He says the situation has changed in the two countries.
But now, it has not changed. So they have started participating. Burkina Faso is not participating in Africa, but at least their youth teams are traveling to France to go and take part in competitions. So there has been an improvement. And I'm happy that at the last African Under-16 Youth Championship, there were 3 teams from the zone. I mean, 2 teams, Nigeria and Ivory Coast. So that has been an improvement. So the reception has been very, very encouraging.
Ahmed says countries in FIBA Africa Zone 3 also dominated the 3x3 basketball event at the ongoing 12th All-African Games in Rabat, Morocco. Nigeria's female under-23 team won the gold medal, while Mali, another country in the zone, won the silver medal. Ahmed says the key to the success is the awareness and competitions being held in member countries of FIBA Africa Zone 3. This is Mike Mbonye for the Sunny Side of Sports in Lagos.
Thanks, Iron Mike. And please send my sporty regards to Colonel Sam Amedu.
Hi, my name is Colonel Sam Amedu, retired, the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3. I want to give a shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
In more African basketball news, 2-time NBA All-Star Luol Deng recently returned to South Sudan to conduct a youth development camp. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Winnie Serino reports from Juba.
The NBA basketball star says he constructed the Manute Ball basketball court in Juba 4 years ago to pay tribute to the former NBA star, late Manute Ball, so that his legacy is remembered by generations of South Sudanese. Deng says his foundation is coaching more upcoming basketball players in South Sudan.
We have a program now that's growing and is getting bigger. We are very proud of it. We know there's a lot of more work. The vision is to make it bigger. We are hoping, I don't know when, but we are hoping to hopefully create an academy. But it's something that we see the success that the kids are having from it. And it's something that is beautiful to share with everyone.
Deng says his foundation has built basketball courts in Awil State, Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, and Wau. He says his foundation has been sending 10 South Sudanese doctors every year abroad for additional training in surgery. He says basketball can also help many South Sudanese develop a career.
We believe that this is a tool that we can use not just for basketball, but it's a way of getting scholarships and going to high schools and getting a better education. And it's also a tool to take kids off the streets, but also occupy them with teamwork, teach them, you know, how to work together, how to communicate.
15-year-old Malong Malwal is among the beneficiaries of the Lual Deng Foundation. Malwal says the foundation brought him from Rumbek to Juba 2 years ago, and he has completed his senior secondary school.
Lual Deng Foundation is the one who brought me from the village when I was, I do play in village by then. So they went and they see how I play good, and they, when they brought me to the city and they sponsored me, and they weren't taking my recommendation.
16-year-old Jeldru Ring, another basketball player, says the Lual Deng Foundation has helped him learn other skills.
It kind of made me a better person, like kind of improved my leadership skills. Like, you know, sometimes I'm the captain, I'll be the captain of a team, and, you know, got to lead people. Communication, my communication skills have improved, you know, talking to my teammates. I got to know a lot of people. Like, I have now, like, a wide range of friends right now.
18-year-old Fiona Richard says she learned to play basketball while in primary school. She says she was lucky to travel up to Texas in the U.S., for trainings and received international scholarships.
I played when I joined senior one. I studied senior one, then senior two, I got a bursary, like scholarship for also games. I went to the team to Kenya. I was there for 1 year. I got another bursary also in another school in Uganda. By then it was 2017. I played in Uganda 2018. We went like secondary school. They call it East Africa Games over. Yeah, so we went, it was in Rwanda, 2018, in August. So we went there, we played, and we won the trophy for the school. So this year, I decided to come back to my county.
Deng says his foundation will increase the number of women in its programs and create a platform that connects and unifies all South Sudanese in the diaspora. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Thanks, Winnie. Turning to tennis, American star Serena Williams has advanced to the second round of the U.S. Open in New York after easily winning her opening match. Joining us with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Well, it took Serena Williams just under 1 hour to pull off a 6-1, 6-1 victory against Maria Sharapova. Serena was back on the court for the first time since retiring from the Rogers Cup final earlier this month due to back spasms. But on Monday, her back injury was clearly not a factor, and afterwards, she said her on-court domination was all about focus.
I think I was able to zone in well, especially down break points and not letting her in the match, because she's the kind of player that keeps going, and then even towards the end, she just wants to keep fighting. And, you know, one point here or there, she could have won at least another game, so I wanted to make sure I stayed focused.
And Serena said the crowd response also played a huge part in her performance.
It was great. I mean, the fans, like I said, on the court, they were so amazing, and they were so, like, I could hear them walking down the hallway, and it was such a good feeling.
Serena returns to Flushing Meadows 12 months after losing to Naomi Osaka in the women's final. During that match, Serena clashed with umpire Carlos Ramos after he handed her 3 code violations in the second set. Rather than risk another confrontation, the U.S. Tennis Association has decided not to allow Ramos to officiate any matches played by Serena or her sister Venus in this year's tournament. And for the first time, code violations will be posted on the tournament scoreboards as they occur. 37-year-old Serena last won the U.S. Open title in 2014 and has her sights set on clinching a record-tying 24th Grand Slam title. Her next match will be on Wednesday against fellow American Catherine McNally. Earlier on Monday, big sister Venus easily defeated China's Zhen Zaizai 6-1, 6-0. And afterwards, Venus said whether the victory is easy or tough, the most important thing is to win.
I was happy with today, so I'm not going to ask for more. And whether the win is easy or whether it's tough, a win is a win. And getting to the next round is about getting the win on your side and building yourself up during the tournament and patting yourself on the back for every good achievement.
Venus will next face Ukraine's Elena Svitolina in the second round. Tune in on Wednesday for match results from defending champion Naomi Osaka and rising star Coco Gauff, who makes her return to the Grand Slam spotlight on Tuesday. On the men's side, world number one Novak Djokovic performed a little victory dance after defeating Spain's Robert Caballas Baena in their first time matchup on Monday. Afterwards, Djokovic told reporters he's satisfied with his first win back on the U.S. Open stage.
I've been in this particular situation many times in my career, and I know, you know, what feels comfortable for me, what I need to do in order to get far in the tournament. Obviously, I have a lot of respect for anybody that I play against, and today I played against a player that I never faced before. That doesn't happen too often. It was a solid performance. I think I can still play better, but it's kind of expected for the first match, and you know, I'm hoping that I can build from here.
And he says he's focused on staying at the top of the world rankings.
It's obviously at this stage of my career, my life, Grand Slams, it's mostly about Grand Slams, really. I mean, how can I, you know, set my shape and form to be at my best, to reach the peak of my tennis performance and my abilities on a Grand Slam? They matter the most in the history of our sport.
The 2018 U.S. Open champion has claimed four of the last five Grand Slam titles and will next face Argentine Juan Ignacio Londera in his quest to defend his title. Five-time U.S. Open champion Roger Federer has edged closer to claiming a sixth trophy after his first-round victory over India's Sumit Nagal, who made his Grand Slam debut. Federer's next opponent will be Bosnian Demir Zumher in the second round. And stay tuned on Wednesday when we'll have the results of Rafael Nadal's upcoming first-round match against Aussie John Millman. Much, much more tennis news to come, but for now, I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. For many, blindness or poor vision can keep them from sports like cycling. But a New York City nonprofit called In Tandem works to make cycling accessible to everyone. The organization unites sighted New Yorkers with the visually impaired so that everyone can enjoy a ride. Anna Rice reports.
Two, one, up!
Artie Elephant always loved biking. As he got older, he lost his sight, but not his love for cycling. So he figured out a way to stay on the road by riding in tandem with sighted friends. He passed away in 2013, but those friends turned his idea into a non-profit, starting with 20 tandem bikes.
Then I tell her which pedal I prefer to be up. So I would like the left pedal up.
Today, In Tandem volunteers ferry blind, low vision, and other disabled riders around New York. But before they do, each volunteer is asked to close their eyes for a split second as they bike to feel what it's like. Then, after a short course in tandem biking, they are ready to meet their passengers.
Maria, and then we'll have Bill.
The volunteers are a varied group. There are lawyers, doctors, and IT specialists who give up their time to ride with someone who has forgotten what it feels like to pedal.
Nice to see you again.
Yeah.
You're not wearing a pretty dress this time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're about to step down.
As the bikes fan out across New York City, service dogs wait patiently for their owners.
I was nervous the first couple of times that I did In Tandem because you're in someone else's hands. You're totally dependent on them to steer the bike and coordinate with you.
I'm Ben.
Hi, I'm Susan.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So,
all right,
do you want to check out your seat? Yeah.
I think the seat's probably the right height.
Okay, great.
So I'm ready to roll when you are.
Okay, let's 3, 2, 1.
They have nothing in common except for the 30 minutes they will spend biking in tandem. But Ben will do his best to let Susan feel the sensation she has long since forgotten.
Over to the left, there's, I think, a baseball game going on. Maybe it's softball, actually. It looks like softball. Normally, when I ride around the park, I would never describe what I'm looking at, although there's, you know, a tree over there or a dog running around. But they seem to really enjoy it. And
absolutely. It's joyous. I always find myself smiling for no reason as I'm biking.
Since its creation in 2013, In Tandem Cycling has brought together more than 600 volunteers and 400 visually impaired passengers. Volunteers will spend the winter months raising money for new equipment to make sure they're right back here next summer. Anna Rice, VOA News.
Thanks, Anna. And that wraps up the August 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sidrak Franklin. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sunny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the continent has seen a decline in the number of authoritarian regimes since the 80s, but still, the number of democracies has not increased significantly. A report card on democracy on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you're an optimist and tend to look at the bright side of life, a new study led by Boston University may have some good news for you. The study authors found evidence that suggests optimists indeed live longer. To reach their findings, the researchers analyzed data involving thousands of men and women that was gathered over a 30-year period. The study finds that most optimistic men and women, on average, had an 11 to 15% longer lifespan and had 50 to 70% greater odds of reaching 85 years old compared to those who were the least optimistic. So, it might be a good idea to take a clue from the comedy group Monty Python.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life.
I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA.